you for joining us, Evan Bray. It is great to have you here on this Thursday morning. Okay, let's talk about the music that you've been hearing this morning. I'm actually shocked at, and maybe I shouldn't be, how many texts we've got from people saying, man, what is this music we're hearing this morning? Some people liking it, some people not liking it, some people scratching their heads. I know Dave in Assiniboia said, can you post a playlist of these tunes? So this has been done with purpose. And I'll give Frank, one of our tech producers, the credit for this. He found this fella online by the name of Nick Harrison. He goes by the professor. He takes an AI program. He lists whatever the song is that he wants to change and then turns them into AI covers, essentially. So you could turn, you know, Pour Some Sugar on Me into a soul or a ballad or R&B. So these, every song that we have played this morning is some kind of AI cover tune. Some people don't like that idea. Of course, we know that the music industry, the show business, acting, really concerned about the impact that AI can have, because the ability to do something like that is something that you would have needed a studio and professionals to do, and now people can do it sitting at home at their desk at the supper table with a program and a computer. AI is a topic. It fascinates me. I have to say it fascinates me. I also have to say I'm a bit of a rookie when it comes to using it. I use the simple program of ChatGPT, and I use it to try and, you know, stimulate ideas, whether we're coming up with ideas for things for the show, whether we're talking about different angles that we can look at something. I mean, it is a great way to kind of add to the brainstorming that you do. It's definitely got its place. In other ways, AI is taking over and is doing much more. And in fact, in some places, I know there's worried about job loss as a result of that. And so anytime we talk about that, I love to be able to bring an expert onto the program. And we've had my next guest on before, and I'm happy to say we've got him back today as well. Brian McQuinn is joining us, the University of Regina Associate Professor. He's co-director for the Center for Artificial Intelligence, Data, and Conflict. And Brian McQuinn here for the next hour, joining me to talk AI and to take any questions that you might have. The text line and phone lines officially open for you, 1-877-332-8255. Brian McQuinn, thanks for taking the call.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks. So you just heard me talk about the songs. It's funny, we've been getting a ton of texts saying, what is this music? I've never heard this song before. Who did this remake? And it's all this morning, the whole morning, it's been artificial intelligence.
It'd be interesting how long it took your technician to do it. I mean, it probably took him an hour, and you have enough content for an entire morning for a show.
Yeah, I mean, I know he talked about this fella he found online that this is what he does. He takes, you know, an old song that we know as a rock song, and he turns it into a blues ballad or something like that. But
I think it's a good example of how, you know, there's obviously a lot of hype right now, and there is without question an AI bubble that's happening right now. I mean, the amount of money that's being invested, basically, I mean, the Canadian economy is about $2 trillion. The AI firms and U.S. government is investing basically $500 billion and potentially as much as $1 trillion over the next year. So half of the Canadian economy, which is, you know, one of the 10 largest economies in the world, in AI. Right now, basically, they know for sure that 92% of the GDP in the United States is related to AI investments.
Wow.
I mean, that's the largest economy in the world. So there is a bubble coming. The question is just, and this is not my sort of just my assessment. If you know Sam Altman, who's the head of OpenAI, who is behind ChatGPT, his recent comment was, someone is going to lose a phenomenal amount of money. We don't know who, and a lot of people are going to make a phenomenal amount of money. And that's really what this is. There's a lot of people being high stakes, kind of like Las Vegas type bets on AI, but there is going to be a bubble. And when it does, the U.S. economy is going to get smashed, which therefore means Canadians are going to get smashed as well.
I mean, we see it featuring in our budget, for example. Yep. The Canadian, the federal budget that was just announced this week had some budget money. It was kind of couched in that whole area of technological advances, artificial intelligence, and whatever. But, you know, our government's understanding, I mean, they're budgeting for it, but are they really understanding what they need to do and what their steps should be?
So there is actually a process going on right now, that's sort of this mad dash to try to come up with a plan within Canada, and it's bringing in some of our best minds. I'm always, the first thing I always talk about AI in Canada is some of the founders, some of the people who actually, ideas are actually the basis of what is happening now. The sort of basic research was done by Canadian researchers. This is when people assume it's all American. It's actually Canadian researchers with the sort of neural nets and the sort of a lot of the deep thinking technology were actually Canadian researchers. And so we actually used to be number three in the AI world because of our history of doing AI research. We are now dropped down to about eight because in the last couple of years, the amount of money and just the sheer brain power that is required to keep advances going. So we have a really good place on that. We're sort of fighting right now, I think, to try to get back up that scale. And I think we'll see. I mean, the budget has some of it, and the challenge is going to be in pushing it out and getting, translating that into action. We have three amazing centers here in Canada that do a lot of work around this. So we are well positioned, especially when it comes to the Europeans. We just don't have the money the Americans do, who can basically buy their way into advancement.
Brian McQuinn is my guest, University of Regina. So when you say we have three great centers in Canada, who are they and what exactly are the focuses of the work, the research, the alignment that's going on?
So there's three, one based in Edmonton, one based in Toronto, and one based in Montreal. And I won't go through the names because it's basically Amy, Vector, and Mila. But these are all the centers that were created by basically the three sort of four, grandfathers of AI. And the fact that they were based in Canada meant that these centers have been around for a long time. So we've been able to take advantage of sort of long-standing research in Canada. The challenge is just, where do we go now? And right now there's an arms race between the U.S. and China. And unfortunately, any kinds of control, any kinds of guardrails is basically been thrown out the window because everyone is racing to what is AGI, the idea that at some point AI is going to become sort of self-aware and be as sort of smart as a human being and able to sort of teach itself. There's a race, and we don't know when it's going to be. It used to be like 5 years out. Now people say it's going to be maybe a year out. This is what everyone is racing to, because whoever gets there first is going to have a strategic advantage over any other country in the world. But the thing that I always say, and I think I've said it before in your program, is imagine, I mean, this is very similar to what we went through with who would get to the bomb first as far as a nuclear bomb. But imagine that was being done by corporations as opposed to governments. And so a lot of this technology is going to be owned by two people in the world, and they are then going to have the most powerful technology / weapons / transformative sort of change in their hands, and they are going to be private corporations.
Okay, we're going to take our first break. Brian McQuinn is with us for a full hour, University of Regina Associate Professor. There's lots of, I think, heavy discussions when it comes to AI, but there's some light ones as well. I see, in fact, someone twigged me onto the fact that there's a new, you can get an assistant to help you with your Christmas shopping.
Yes.
There's just so many different ways in which AI is being used. And one of the questions that I'm asking to you listening is, are you using AI at all? Has it changed your life? Do you know someone who's using it? What's that experience been like? If you have a story to share how you're using it, it doesn't matter what sector. It could be in the ag sector. Brian, you and I have talked about that before. Lots of people in agriculture, artificial intelligence becoming huge in the ag sector. So I look forward to this discussion. And while we've got Brian here, now's the time to ask the questions. So if you've got a question, feel free to shoot it in at 1-877-332-8255. We'll take our first break. We'll be right back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the program. Evan Bray, yes, now I've disclosed that the music that you've been listening to on our show today, and this is only today, we have substituted all of the regular songs with AI-generated songs. So a lot of these are obviously well-known songs, but they've been crafted by someone who's put it through AI and changed whether it's the genre, the gender of the person singing the song, whatever the case may be. And that's what we've been playing throughout the show today. I mean, this is just one of many easy things that you have at your fingertips, ways that AI can be used. Brian McQuinn is my guest, University of Regina Associate Professor. We're chatting about AI. The number of people texting in about these songs, Brian, has been hilarious because there's mixed reviews. Some people are saying, wow, I'm intrigued. This is kind of cool. Others say, you know what, I'm actually more scared about this and what that might do to the music industry.
And it's quite profound. I mean, this is, I think, one of the things that makes AI so difficult to get your mind around. I mean, I spend all day, every day on this, and it's still sometimes hard for me to kind of understand the full breadth, is you'll have these amazing little programs where you can, you know, use your friends' images and make these kind of spoofy videos of them doing funny things. At the same time, you have AI, you know, we have adversaries, Russian influence operations in Canada, who are now, because of generative AI, being able to produce 10,000 articles targeting Canada of different kind. Or you can have, you know, Christmas AI agents that are going to help you. You give them an idea of a person, and they will make suggestions for presents that you would have never thought of. Mm-hmm. And then actually, in theory, will help you go look for them and find the best deal online. And in probably 6 months, we'll also then be able to buy it for you.
Yeah. Let's talk about that, Brian, because that is something that it caught my eye as I was preparing for this segment. There's lots of these assistance that you can have, whether it's shopping. I mean, I've got a coworker that uses it to help pick her wardrobe, what she's going to wear every day.
Yeah.
But the notion of having an AI shopping assistant to help you with your Christmas gifts, how does this work?
Well, there are multiple different versions of this, and you can see companies kind of groping their way through, trying to say, you know, because it ends up being, it can be very gimmicky in the sense of like, because if you get eyeballs on your actual AI agent who's going to help, guess what? The companies who you then send them to, you can ask for a percentage. And so there's always kind of some gimmickiness to it, but at the same time, it also can be very helpful. I mean, there's a lot of people who are dressed now by AIs every morning. They know what's in their wardrobe. They sort of say, hey, this is my mood. And so now does that demonstrably change their life? No. And it's with the Christmas. You basically can put into a AI agent of some kind, you know, this is who I'm buying for, what do you think? And so, you know, they produce a list, and then they say, well, how much would this cost? Are there any deals out there? And it will go look for actual sales and find them for you. So I think this is something that obviously sometimes you need to invest a fair amount of time to learn how they work. But if it's something that is of interest, and it often is kind of fun as well, which is, I think, where it often can be the most sort of user-friendly in that way.
You and I are chatting about this, and I got a text in from Garth saying, Evan, I need to tell you that I use AI to try and save myself time, and this notion of using it to help with my Christmas shopping is intriguing. He goes on in his text to say he has a full-time job. He also runs a business.
Yeah.
He's a father of three children, and he's married. So he says, you know, trying to keep the plate spinning at all times, this is just a way to simplify my life. One less decision I have to make, essentially.
Exactly. And this is where, I mean, so we have to really, it's interesting, Canada's a little different than the U.S. and a couple of the countries. So we have adopted, like our businesses have adopted this at one of the lowest rates. It's only 4% of Canadian businesses that are actually employing AI. So as a set of economy, we're actually very wary of it, and I think that's probably a good thing in general. But as individuals, we are using it much, much more. And I think this is where the challenge is, figuring out where does it benefit your life and how is it that you can, you know, add efficiencies, whether that be at work, you know, helping with emails, things that aren't profound but are going to save you time. And I'll give you one example, and sorry if this is self-promoting, but we are starting to build AI agents here that look at sort of Russian influence, and we are helping NGOs who would take 5 days to write a report to do that report in 4 hours so they could produce more alerts on things happening in our ecosystem. So it is very valuable if you have the time and you want to be able to apply it to what you do. The question is just sort of in the background of what are the things that we don't know what's going on, and how, you know, some of this more sinister elements of how it's being used to duplicate people's voices in scams. Mm-hmm. When you have, you know, CEOs of major AI companies saying, hey, every family, in order to protect you from AI, every family should have a code word to make sure that they know it's their family members calling.
Gosh, that's hard. It's even hard to get your wrap your mind around the fact that you need to do that.
The idea that is how we're going to protect society, not the CEO who's in charge of the AI that they're deploying into the society, but that the society should have code words. So your grandma needs to know a code word so that when her grandchildren are calling her saying they're in trouble and they need money, they have a code word in order for her not to be scammed.
Wow. This is
so again, this is like, you know, silly to the profound in all one conversation. Mm-hmm.
You know, I threw it out there earlier asking, you know, how do you use AI? How has it changed your life? We're getting some great texts coming in, and I was going to share this one from
Please.
Tyler in Saskatchewan. So Tyler says, I use AI to help edit a podcast. So he uses it to clean up background noise, makes it sound like we're in a studio, but we're really in a home office. And by the way, this is the Bunny Hug Farmers podcast. So I've actually listened to these guys. They do a great job of this podcast, but there's just a good example of one simple way in which this is being used.
And it is allowing people who, like, for example, websites. You can literally go into whether it's ChatGPT or the others, and say, can you build me a website on this idea? And it will build you the entire website. And so this, the ability to start new podcasts, to start new, you know, business ideas, it facilitates the things that often were barriers around technology or podcasts, because it's, as one that we started recently, you know, it's a lot of work. And to be able to automate those things means that people can do things that they would never have been able to do. And so it unleashes all of that innovation. But with any, you know, everything that has dual use, right? For every positive, there's always going to be a negative. If you don't understand how a tool is going to be used negatively, you don't understand the tool. And that's always the part that I get a little bit scared about.
Well, and I think the further fear is that the tool becomes the the teacher.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's what I'm seeing on the text line. I'm generally speaking, I'm seeing fear from people about, you know, as intriguing as this is, you know, one lady here, Bernice, saying, like, aren't you at all scared? She's asking, I think asking you, aren't you scared about what this means and how we're going to control it?
Every day. And the extent to which that fear is there, it fluctuates from day to day, depending on, and again, because often it's very funny, right? But one of the things, and we talked about this last time, was the AI companions. You now have 50% of teenagers who said they've had a meaningful interaction with an AI companion that they thought was as good or better than interacting with a human.
Yeah, that's
what happens when our teenagers, all of their friends are actually AI companions.
Yeah.
And they when they interact with a normal human being, they're like, these normal human beings are, you know, they don't do everything I ask and don't tell me I'm the best thing in the world. I'm just going to stay with my AI companions.
Let's take a break here. And we've still got Brian with us right up until 12 o'clock. So lots of time for your questions. I want you to join in on this conversation. Are you using AI right now? How are you using it? How is it impacting? How is it making your life better? Or are you worried about your job? I mean, that's another area you and I have talked about before, and maybe we can go there when we come back.
Sure.
Lots to talk about. Brian McQuinn, my guest, and AI is the topic. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Evan Bray, great to have you here. And yes, that is another AI-generated song that we are listening with my guest, Brian McQuinn. Each one of them, I find myself kind of, you know, I'm intrigued. Like that one there.
It's like, that might even be better.
Well, I can tell you the phone lines, the text lines, I should say, fairly busy today. Lots of people wanting to weigh in on this. So here's a big one. And let's just talk about this for a second, because I have many people. Cal, one text here that I hear from regularly from Oxbow, said, you know, he's very interested in politics, like many of our listeners are. So they will use AI to pull together stories, to look at different things from a political lens, but feels as if there is a left lean from a political standpoint to what AI generates. Now, you have thoughts on that?
So this is obviously, I mean, as with everything in the United States, everything becomes very political very quickly. And the culture wars in the U.S. are now come to AI. And so you have individuals like Elon Musk, who have the resources, have created their own AI company and have put out their own AI chatbot called Grok. And it is decidedly, and one would say slightly manipulated, to have sort of very particular views that are much farther, if you want to use the spectrum from left to right, on the right. And then because the claim is that some of the other ones are more left-leaning. This is, I mean, without getting into a political discussion with you, I think it is something that can be very challenging to navigate, because a lot of the AIs are going to basically pull in huge amounts of, whether it be the New York Times or just academic, you know, research. And so some of these things are going to be, and this depends on the topic, are going to be more fact-based.
Right.
Because I think what we see, at least in some of the stuff, and this is some of what we research on the far right, is not really fact-based. It's, you know, they live in, you know, opinions as facts. But at the same time, there is going to be different biases in different chatbots, because what you train them on is what they then come back with you on. So this becomes the challenge. There's probably some legitimacy there, but as with the United States and the people who are running all of this, the correction is usually way, way too far in the other direction. And so I think that ends up being, it becomes just a sort of another part of the culture war in the U.S.
What about, you know, when we think about the bias that can come through, sometimes it's not bias, but it's false information. And I was reading an article, I can't remember the publication, I want to say it was the National Post, but I could be wrong, where there was actually some bad case law because a lawyer or someone working in a legal firm was basically lazy, didn't do their research, used AI. And essentially a misstep based on something that they pulled from the internet that wasn't even a real thing.
Try being a professor. Imagine the papers we get where people just have references that literally don't exist. And this is it. So, you know, the power of AI is really kind of awe-inspiring in certain ways. But at the same time, we have to remember it's like dealing with a child. It will just hallucinate. It just makes these things up. And so references, whether it be to case law or to in academics, you know, like a reference to a paper, but it can just, or an example that I said before, as far as like the AI thinks something is in a, but it's not actually there. And so AIs hallucinate all of the time. And so if you think they are perfection, they are not. They are far from it. And so I think it's important, especially if you use it professionally, that you are double-checking everything like that, because you can get, I mean, there are lawyers who have put in briefs to judges and then had the judge, who of course knows the case law, being like, this doesn't exist. And imagine, like, the sort of credibility that you lose as a professional in that way. So let alone as students and us having to deal with, I mean, can you imagine how it is transforming the nature of what it means to write a paper in university? It is transforming education in ways that I think universities are just barely starting to grapple with.
We had yesterday was a, I think it was Bring Your Child to Work Day. We had two fellas in the studio, both 14 years old, and off air during the break, we talked about what research looks like for them, and their teachers encourage them to use AI, but kind of put some guardrails around it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is so, and it's, I think it's very similar to what you were talking about, brainstorming. I mean, if you are like, hey, I want to do a top, and I walk through my students with this. It's like, hey, if you have an interest in this particular topic in my class, whatever, let's say it's Sudan or some other country, and I do a lot of work on conflict. Put it in, say, what are the kind of ideas that you think would be of interest around this topic? And it will rattle out 20 of them. And if you go, hey, that's actually interesting, can you know, tell me more about this idea? And it rattles. And so you can use it almost, and in some ways I often do this almost like as a postgrad or as a colleague, where you kind of bounce back ideas around. And it just helps you sometimes clarify things that you are going to, you know, try to work on. But again, the question becomes, when does it cross over into something that's more unethical? If you then say, please write an entire paper for me while I go play my video game, you're actually cheating yourself. And that's the piece, right? It's at least from an education perspective, it's that you're just, it's doing your thinking for you. If it helps you think better, that's fantastic. It just with you then kind of take the next step and it does your thinking for you.
Brian McQuinn is my guest, University of Regina Associate Professor. He's co-director for the Center for Artificial Intelligence, Data and Conflict conflict. There was a text here from Carol. I'm just trying to find it now. Lots of texts coming in. Oh, so here it is. Carol says, entry-level jobs are disappearing for young people because of AI. That's not good. And then kind of has a second part to her question about, you know, what is AI in the music world doing to the royalties for the original artists? Maybe can you answer both of those? Let's talk about jobs. Entry-level jobs.
I can answer the jobs. The royalty thing you're going to have to bring. I think there's artists who have very strong views of this, and for good reason. I mean, the fact that you just all the you know, songs you use, there's no royalty going to anyone, right?
Right.
And so that's where I think the worry comes from. So on the jobs, basically 60% of jobs are highly exposed to AI. That's the bad news.
This
is a very nuanced conversation.
What number?
60%.
60%.
So more than half. And this what's fascinating about this is if automation and trade came for sort of more blue collar jobs, AI is coming more for the white collar jobs. If you use a lot of AI in your job now, guess what? It's only two or three steps to where the AI is doing your job for you. And so this is where sometimes I think it's not as obvious who's going to be affected. Amazon just had one of their plans leaked in the last couple of weeks, where they basically are planning between AI and robotics to cut half, so 600,000 jobs in the next 8 years. They have 1.5 million employees, so basically a third over the next 8 years. Now, there is right now a lot of job cuts that are happening across the board, and there is a lot of AI washing that's happening, which means blaming AI for things that are actually related to, like, slowing down to the economy and other inefficiencies, but it makes it easier for companies to sell it, and they get into less trouble with their investors and maybe even their employees to basically say, it's AI, it's AI. So the good news is this, that replacing people with AI is complicated, expensive, and time-consuming. And yes, you can see these sort of very quick efficiencies, but to replace an entire human is actually a lot harder to do. And so and it takes quite a bit of investment to do it. And I mean, the fact that only 4% of Canadian businesses are employing AI, that just shows you that the sort of actual adoption rate of this is going to be slower than of course it's always predicted to be. I mean, we saw this. Remember when Amazon was going to transform the world on books? Well, that took actually 20 years, and then they did. It just took 15 years longer than they thought it would. AI is going to obviously move faster than that, but I think people should be aware of this and be looking at, if AI is going to do this part of my job, maybe that's a good thing in the sense that that was kind of some of the more, I don't know, time-consuming menial stuff. But the creativity, the strategy, the relationships of people and how that part of my job works, that can't be replaced by AI. So there is some strategy to that. But your caller's absolutely right. Some of the more sort of entry-level stuff like coding. Remember when coding, make sure your kids know how to code?
Right.
Well, AI is better
coding
at coding
camps
than human beings
and all of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah. But now you still need coders to give them that direction, to be able to check things. It's always like this. In theory, you move up one level of, like, you know, capacity, and some of the more menial stuff maybe gets done by AI. But if that's an entire, like, rung or tier of jobs in a company, where do the young people get the experience to then get to that next level? And you end up with all these, you know, ugly catch-22s.
Okay, we need to take our last break. A question that has just come in is around, you know, there's this notion when we look at energy production in Canada that the Canadian government needs to deregulate, needs to get some of these inhibitive policies out of the way and just open the door for industry to grow naturally. The question essentially is, and don't answer it now, we'll do it when we come back, Brian, but is that what needs to happen here, or are we in need of regulation from government when it comes to AI? That's the question we'll start with Brian when we come back. AI is our topic here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here. So, before we jump back into the AI segment, I just got handed a note from our newsroom. The new CEO of Real, the Regina Exhibition Association Limited in Regina, Rick Bennett, has quit. He's been in the job 5 months. He was just appointed to the job president and CEO of the Regina Exhibition Association. He's made a decision for personal and family reasons to leave the organization. So there you go. Our newsroom is following this. It sounds like Trent Fraser, who was in the acting role before they hired Rick Bennett, will be back in the acting role until they can get this sorted out. So newsroom will follow that along. That's got nothing to do with AI, or at least I don't think it does. But Brian, you know, you never know. Brian.
I always love, why did they use the same phrase? The phrase is never believable.
What's that? For personal
I'm doing it for personal and family reasons, because it was the same personal and family they had 5 months ago.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. This is, I'm shocked, actually. They just handed me this piece of paper, but we'll leave that for the newsroom to follow up on. Where I want to go with you next is the federal government. Many people will say, look, when it comes to energy production, for example, get the regulations, get the policies out of the way, let the industry naturally evolve in and of itself. Is that the same for AI, or are we yearning for government regulation on this?
So, first of all, I mean, I probably have a slightly more sort of government-oriented leaning around some of the guardrails, just because what I've seen, I mean, look at social media, right? I mean, there is really no controls at all. And I've seen what it's done overseas where, you know, it's been responsible and been part of, like, violence and targeting of certain populations. So I've seen the consequences of unregulated social media in other countries. So I've always called for more of that. And now that we're looking, you know, Australia just banned all social media under the age of 16. So it does harm, and not having any guardrails, I think, is usually a bad thing, and is usually being advocated for the people who are in charge of those things, because why do they want to have guardrails, right? I think AI is actually even more dangerous. And so now, does that mean that we should be controlling every aspect? But I think the idea that, you know, before someone puts out some gigantic new model or new application, that they should be making public any tests they did as to the harm it might cause, the fact that they're not doing any tests around that, I think that's a problem. I think we can all agree that that would be a problem, so that they don't even know how it could be misused. So I think at the same time, what often is not talked about, AI sounds really fun, but the amount of water and electricity that it takes will blow your mind. I mean, basically, Meta and OpenAI are looking at creating their own nuclear power plants in order to be able to power all of these data centers. I mean, this $1 trillion that's being invested is data centers.
So what's the water? Where's the water coming in?
These data centers are these gigantic, and they're just like farms of computers that are running. The amount of coolant that it takes. So for every query you put into ChatGPT, 16 ounces of water.
Come on.
You just put anything in.
For every query?
If you put in 50, that's like your office full of water by the end of the day, depending on how much you use it.
Wow.
And so, but where does the average consumer, and this is again, right, the consumers get the short end of the stick, and I'm trying to be as polite as possible. But like, when these centers drop into these different areas, and they're usually rural because they have electricity that they can take up but without sort of affecting the larger grids, but there's also water there. And we actually are not even studying how much, it's not made public how much water they're using. It's probably even more than what we think, because that's what cools all of the computers. But it's going to hit people's pocketbook, because the more AI that comes on, the more it's going to increase the cost of electricity, because we just don't have grids that are able to take what is basically going to be expected to come online.
Wow. That's fascinating. I would have never.
But this is—it's always like these consumers who get screwed in the process, right? The average person who's like, "Yeah, okay, all these rich people are getting richer off their AI stuff," while the average person's, you know, electrical bill goes up just so that they can have an AI shopper for them. You know, woo.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, it's fascinating. You and I were chatting though between the breaks there. We were chatting off air, and you were talking about a caution that you always like to bring up when we're talking about AI.
And so I think AI, because it's also being used for disinformation, and you know that's a big part of what I often come on here and talk about. And the one thing that I always try to raise with people is that the amount of AI-driven content is increasing significantly, being pumped into Canada, pushing themes of various different kinds. And the one that I always harp on, and I'm sorry if I'm ever repetitive, but I think it's important for Canada, is this idea that polarization is not natural. The idea, you know, this belief that someone who disagrees with you now in Canada is not just wrong, but is like a threat to the country and therefore is un-Canadian. These are one of the, and we're finding more and more now, these are one of the narratives that gets pushed harder and harder in Canada, not just in the world, but in Canada. And that in order for those beliefs is, one, you have to start to believe it yourself, but that's what they want. They want us to kind of to no longer see each other as human beings, but if someone disagrees with you, because it sort of tears apart our country. And that disinformation depends on real people clicking and forwarding things. Bots and these bot farms is not how disinformation works. It only works when you and I see something and push it forward. So I would just ask people to say, do you want to live in a world that polarization is that intense? And therefore, double check when you send something as to whether you're contributing to that.
Brian, always appreciate having you on the program. Thanks for the stop by and the chat today.
Always a pleasure, sir. The hour goes by fast.
It sure does. Brian McQuinn, University of Regina Associate Professor. And thanks to everyone that joined in the conversation. If you just missed, I mentioned we just got word that the new CEO for Real, Regina Exhibition Association Limited, Rick Bennett, has stepped down from the position, made this decision due to personal and family reasons. Don't know a lot more than that. There has been an interim person, Trent Fraser, put into the role, and that's about all that we're hearing from it. Our newsroom continuing to follow this story, and we'll bring you the latest. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.